Bradfo Show.
That's my open?
That's what they used to call me, Swivel Hip Bradford.
That's my open.
I'm waiting for you to justify your stupid opinion. Bradfo Show.
That's delicious.
Oh, my goodness. What a day. What a day. I get to sit in the Sheraton lobby interviewing on the Ring of Honor of Bradfo Show podcast guest, David Ross.
Thanks for having me, Rob. Oh, appreciate it.
You're so polite and so nice. So there's a few things I want to get to. Are you all right? You hydrated?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good.
There's a few things I want to get to you. First of all, it's great to see you. Good job with ESPN.
Thanks.
It's a travesty that you weren't working Sunday night. But that's just me. A few things I want to get to with you. The first thing is, I was with Bill Messina of the Camera Guys, Moose, as we call him, when he interviewed John Lester at spring training, and he told the story, or John Lester told the story about when you visited the mound. Just so I can get the one up on them, please. I mean, just tell me the story. Tell me that story.
Well, that's it. With Johnny, it's a lot of mound visits were either usually, like, really stern, or, like, I was just trying to distract him a little bit because he gets so worked up. And I think later on in the career, it was usually, like, a little bit of a talking to when I'd go out there, a little bit of a screaming match between me and him. But early on, it was just that relationship was still young, and he was just grinding out there. I mean, I remember him really grinding, and I was trying to slow the thing down. You know, we had mound visits back then. we could take as long as we wanted. So I turn around, and I had already walked out there and saw my wife sitting in their seats, him and Farrah, and his wife right behind home plate. You know, John makes good coin, so he invited the peasants and me and my family to sit in his nice seats. And so I went out there, and he's, you know, grinding out, like, what? I'm like, hey, man, you see that brunette right there behind home plate? And he's like, looking, and he knows it's my wife, and he's like, yeah, Hyla? I was like, yeah. She's hot, isn't she? And he's like, what's wrong with you? You know, he's going like, aren't you? You know, he's out there grinding. I just want to distract him. And, you know, it's either a joke or talking to about situation. And it just felt like one of those moments he needed to be distracted a little bit. So I figured I'd point out my sexy wife behind home plate.
So that was the best. I mean, like you said, you probably have to had to do that a few different times where it's not, hey, we get a runner at second. This is what we're going to want to do. This is a, hey, will you, like, chill out or look at the guy in the upper deck? Or was there anything else like that?
There was another good one. It was kind of, like, distracted, and we were playing Detroit, and he was dealing pretty good, pitching well, and we had, like, a two-run lead, I think, and it was getting towards the back end of his pitch count. And he comes in, gives up, like, walked a guy, and gives up a hard hit ground ball to Middlebrooks. And Middlebrooks kind of olayed it a little bit, like didn't, but it was a rock. I mean, it's hit hard, it's a rocket. And next guy, he walks, and I can just tell he's frustrated. And up to bat comes Miguel Cabrera. And we got two outs, and I'm like, all right, well, let's go out there and slow some things down a little bit. So I walk up there, I was like, all right, man, just give me a little bit of breather, you know. He goes, man, I thought Middlebrooks could have had that ball. And I'm like, are you still thinking about that Middlebrooks ball? It was a rocket. And he's like, what do you got? What do you got? I go, we got the best hitter on the planet coming to the plate, and we got a two-run lead. Let's worry about Miguel Cabrera, and we can talk about the ball to Middlebrooks later. And, you know, that was just Johnny. He got, you know, early on when I was there, he'd get distracted every once in a while. He's got to rein him back in, and he was so good when he was focused on what he needed to do.
Oh, well, that's the thing. And I remember in Cleveland, and this isn't going to be the David Ross Talks About John Lester podcast, but I remember in Cleveland one time, I don't know if he didn't talk – to the media, like, you guys had won, but he didn't pitch well, but you won, but he didn't talk. And I think Beckett actually was the one who told him, said, listen, dude, you got to talk. You know, you win the game, you got to talk.
Yeah, one thing I found out about being in Boston really fast is everybody appreciates just you being accountable and honest. Mm-hmm. Like, that's all it is. They just want to, you tell your side of the story and move on. And I learned real quick, like, you know, like, it's fine. You can blame me. Like, I've got no problems with it. Because I caught a lot of wrong pitches, too, early on. And so, you know, I took a lot of the heat because Johnny, you know, Johnny's probably one of the best pitchers I've ever caught. And some of it was my fault. But the media just wants you to stand there and ask And ask you the questions, and you be accountable.
It's amazing, right? I mean, it's really, it's not that difficult.
It's not rocket science.
No,
it really isn't.
Because immediately you do it, you get the thank you, and it goes away. I mean, I use the Core example a lot. Core did that. You did that. Other guys did that. You stand in front of your locker, you do it, it's over.
And when you make mistakes and you just say, yeah, I messed up, like, I think everybody understands there's a human element to baseball, that we're not robots, you're not going to be perfect. You know, we hear that all the time. But when you stand in front of the media, which are basically the go-between between the fans, and say, you know what, I wasn't very good today, but I'm going to try to get better. And at the end of the day, what else are you going to build on that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, well, David Ross stinks. Yeah, we all know that.
Yeah.
We knew that when we signed him, but it was good.
So you're in town because you're doing the ESPN thing, doing the broadcast, and you know, screw whatever has happened on Sunday night. I mean, this is the premier game. This is Yankees, Red Sox, Severino, and Sale. This might be, in your short broadcast career, this might be the game. Right? This might be your best game.
No doubt. This would be the biggest game I've called, for sure, to be in the booth. I'm in there with John Shambi and Rick Sutcliffe, who are probably my two favorite guys to work with. They're just awesome. And, yeah, I mean, this is the baseball mecca here, and you're talking about doing it at Fenway. I haven't been back to Fenway. I'm just super excited about coming back.
Wait, you haven't been back to Fenway?
I have not been back to Fenway since 14.
You're kidding me.
No, I have not.
Why did I think? Really?
Yeah, I was going to come last year and for the Cubs-Red Sox series,
yeah,
for like a dream, and I was going to try to sit in the Monster and the whole deal, and I got on this dance show for a little bit. I don't know if you heard about that.
Yeah.
I got on there. I got on some national television and embarrassed myself a little bit. But, no, I'm super excited to be back. I've done some games on the road, but I haven't been back to Fenway, and so I'm just anxious to get back on the field and feel that.
Is it going to seem? I mean, you've obviously been there. Does it? You think it's going to be weird at all? You've been in that broadcast. I wouldn't imagine.
I haven't been in the booth.
Okay,
I haven't been up there. I don't even know if I've been in the press box. Like, I haven't. You know, we
really?
Never ventured up there. Yeah,
you've
been
in the offices. Johnny Gomes Memorial press box.
No. I heard it's small, and I bought some gloves. It's going to be cold. I bought some gloves today at the mall, and. And yeah, I mean, just the feeling of that stadium for me is going to bring back a lot of cool memories.
Are you comfortable now doing this?
I think this year I was nervous about opening day, and I got to do back to back games in Anaheim, and it felt a lot better. Mm-hmm. It felt a lot more.
What are you better at?
Ease.
What are you better at now than you were when you started doing it last year?
Just wrapping up my thoughts. I think sometimes you get on there and you talk and you don't know how to kind of exit ramp it. You know, like wrap up your what you're trying to say and the pace of the game. And so there's a rhythm up there. There's a rhythm to know where something might happen and telling the story and not talking in the middle of an at bat or a pitch. So. There's a fine line between, you know, you want somebody to go deep and you're telling a story about John Lester mound visits.
Right.
You know?
Well, I mean, the 2 hours thing, too.
Don't start
the John Lester story with 2 hours.
Right, yeah. There's a whole thing into that. So just that a little bit and doing your homework and knowing what you know, the open. For me, the hardest part is the open always. You want to talk, highlight, you know, one person or mm-hmm. something you're watching from each team. That's kind of the most nerve-wracking thing for me still. And Sut said that kind of never goes away because it's scripted. It's not.
Yeah, it's not like here. This happened to me, or this is happening in front of me. I can react to it, whatever.
Right. Yeah, that's the easiest part for me. I love watching the games. It's probably my favorite thing to do since I've retired is just to call the games because you're really just into the game and watching, and it brings back a lot of memories for me. It kind of jars my memory and telling stories and just reacting to what's going on.
Which were you more nervous about, doing your first broadcast or doing the dancing?
Oh, shoot, the dancing.
Oh, what?
Yeah, that's a whole nother. I don't know that I've been more nervous than stepping out on the dance floor.
For the first show, like the actual first time you did, which, by the way, I don't know how you do it. Like, it's one of these things where I can't even conceive. You can give me a year of practicing. I can't conceive doing that.
Well, there's
editing.
It's one of those things. I did put myself out there a lot and did things that were outside of my box. And so I had one of the greatest years ever in 16 for me and my family, the whole deal. And so I just kind of kept with that theme when asked to do that. And I definitely was nervous, but there's nothing that prepares you for stepping out on a dance floor in front of millions of people. I think there's like 10 to 15 million people watch that every Monday.
So most nervous you've ever been in any endeavor?
No doubt. Well, maybe I did skydiving. That was another one. Skydive last year for the open.
But not
airship.
Millions and millions of people are watching.
No, yeah. I thought I might die, but other than that, I was fine. But yeah, just something so far outside my box that I you know, it's a rare. Yeah, every time that didn't get easier either. It actually got tougher, more nervous every time. No, the dancing.
Yeah, so did it really get harder?
Yeah, well, it just got more nerve-wracking because you just realized, like, what am I still doing? And, you know, I thought I'd be on there like a week or two and they'd vote me off and I'd be at the house with the family, you know? And, no, I went all the way to the end somehow. So definitely the craziest thing I've ever done and most outside of my box. So, but at the end of that, I've never been more proud of myself for doing something so mentally and physically tough and nerve-wracking. And I mean, you're talking about putting it all out there, you know.
I bet your family was probably more proud of you doing that than even playing baseball.
They were cheering, you know, because baseball was work. This would, they were cheering me on and like would watch every show, and they had their favorites too. And, my partner Lindsay became like part of the family, like another child, and little young 23-year-old bossing me around. I've had like an older daughter that just kind of was walking dad around the dance floor. It was a unique experience and very, very, very exciting.
What was the hardest move?
Take off my shirt, honestly.
Like, really?
On national TV.
You lost a crap load of weight, though.
I lost like 15 pounds and I was probably leaner than I'd ever been. I got down to like my college weight, like 215.
Really?
Which my playing weight was probably 230, 235. So, I was down there, you know, but not still,
muscle.
It's still like dad, you know, you still got dad bod walking, you know, it's not like I've got like six pack that came out all of a sudden. Like, it's still, I get some
love
handles.
So, how does that happen where you say, does she say, hey, we're going to take off your shirt this time?
She gave me the song and you know, the Magic Mike song, and then she's like, look, we're gonna do, it's hilarious, right? And when she told me all this, I was like, no. And she prepped me, because you get the song about a week and a half before, or the week before your actual dance, so you're working on a whole nother dance. But she's like, hey, I want to let you know, I got the song, this is what they're probably, this is the style, this is what you're gonna have to do, and I'll start choreographing some stuff. And she started telling me this, and it just was like a pit in my stomach. Like, because I had my kids, I'd go to my kids' school to drop them off, and like all the students were like, Mr. Ross, we saw you on Dance with the Stars.
More than baseball, right?
Yeah, it was just crazy.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
So you're like, wait a minute, I'm fixing to take off my shirt in front of these kids. It's all a big nightmare in my head before it starts.
Who was the celebrity on it that you're like, this is cool?
Mr. T.
Oh, man, he was in that one.
He was there early on. What a great guy he was. And he had the whole Chicago connection because he's from there. And he's like, hey, we're representing Chicago. And he gave all the kids, everybody had this little keychain that had all his little sayings like, I pity the fool, all these little sayings. And I brought him home to my kids, and my two-year-old pressed it all night long.
Wait, he was just like going around handing out his keychains?
Yeah, it was a little keychain. Like, it was like a little toy. I guess they sold him, and somebody had him made. But he was top notch, one of the nicest people I've ever met.
Did you do what I would do, which is you have like, okay, I got to think of a question to ask Mr. T. I got to like Rocky 3.
I just asked him like, hey, tell me how it all started. Like how? And
he was a bouncer, right?
Bouncer. I mean, he walked me through the whole thing and the show he was on, and you know, how he's a Southside Chicago guy where, you know, there's some rough neighborhoods and he's bouncing. And I went to these, it was some show, it was like a tough bouncer, some bouncer show. And so he won that or came in second and ran through some door. He was telling me the whole story, but he's a guy, when you sit down and you ask him one question, he's open,
looks the
honest.
Same, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. Very, very much. Yeah. Just older, but not,
yeah,
I mean,
but not like
us all.
No, like,
yeah, but
decrepit,
he's not, no, know, he still works out and lifts weights.
That's
and
good.
If I, wears the headband.
Yeah.
It's really cool. Yeah, it was like one of my favorites.
So I do want to ask you about sort of you doing the Red Sox-Yankees thing. And you were around the Red Sox a little bit, a couple days. And so you get an idea. Do you communicate with Cora at all? I know that you played with him.
Yeah, I talked to him a little bit in the when I went to spring training and visited. I was just trying to visit with everybody.
Yeah.
I took time for him.
You take pride in your craft. So you were asking about it. You were trying to get a feel for it. And you have to get a feel for Seattle when you had to go out there for the opener. But of your limited time with the Red Sox and talking to people about the Red Sox, what's your sort of 1,000 altitude at 32,000 feet perspective of this team?
They're playing looser.
Yeah, you think so?
I think that, I definitely feel like there's a vibe around – When I go to these places, I talk to the trainers that I know and the clubhouse guys.
They'll tell you the truth.
And no players don't throw the manager under the bus or whatever. And so I ask the guys, like, hey, what's the vibe? Give me the vibe. And I ask guys that come in, and, you know, I got some friends that sell boots or suits or whatever, and I ask them too. You know, they give me the vibe in the clubhouses, and you could tell they're just, it's a happy bunch that's having fun. Spring training was going well. They're healthy. David Price seems like a different guy. Just the overall feel and the vibe and how open they were to talk to me, an ex-player, but even guys that I didn't play with, and how open and honest they were.
Well, to me, this is, and I don't disagree with you, but you go back to, we juxtapose a lot against 2013, and that was a loose group too, right? That was
we kind of ran our own.
Right, but that's, so that's sort of, that's, I guess, maybe the difference. If you have a loose group, but, because people are saying, oh, you can't be loose. John Farrell was uptight, and same manager, 2013 compared to 2017, but like you said, and tell me if I'm wrong, it was more of like a, it was the player thing more than like the the manager saying, hey, you know what, I'm going to go in the clubhouse and high five you.
Well, I think John, it was his first year as well as mine, and dealing with the Boston thing, and you know, for me, John, it was fine. For me, he actually gave me some great opportunities, so I don't have anything bad to say about him. But we did have a leadership in that clubhouse from the players' perspective that it really was, and we had a great coaching staff, so it was a lot of just like, stay out of the way. We've got, you know, we've
you
had
knew that veteran. Right away, like coming out of spring training. I remember the first game at Yankee Stadium.
I remember spring training and walking in and the vibe. And all the kind of rumors of it's such a bad clubhouse and this and that.
Bobby Valentine.
And all that, right? And I walked in and was like, wait a minute, there's great dudes in here. I remember distinctly a weekend going, this place is awesome. Like, these guys are awesome. There's one bad egg, and there he is.
That's
him right there. And if we get him out of here, everybody else is going to roll. They did that and a little later on. And you know, it's you know, you have to find that fine line between having a talented player that's a bad bad influence on other guys or just isn't on board, and they figured that out, and kind of off we went.
Yeah, and it's like you said, I think the difference is, and you are correct in assessing that it's a looser bunch, and who knows if that's going to translate, but tell me how it might translate, right? I mean, tell me, because when I heard we're having more fun, well, okay, we'll go out and win 93 games. We'll not go out and win the division.
It translates where you like coming to work. And so it translates where I like being around the guys. I'm going to get there a little earlier. And we communicate better. So maybe the pitching staff talks a little bit more about how they got certain hitters out, or the hitters talk a little bit about how the pitcher's balls come out of their hand, rather than like, I don't like this dude, so I'm not giving him any information. So when you care about the group as a whole and it's looser and you have more fun together in the locker room, off the field, go to dinners, and you don't get a whole lot of those here with the travel, but with that stuff translates, and everybody kind of comes together. And then when you are having an at bat and you want to pick up the guy who punched out bases loaded, you know, the guy before you, and you want to come up with a big two out hit, you know, not that you don't always want to do that, but it just becomes that extra little motivation that kind of puts you over the hump of another team that
makes
sense.
That makes sense to me. I mean, the another thing with Cora, it's like, you know, he's loose and everything else, but the press conferences, we as the media, we focus so much on the press conferences after games, and Farrell was actually criticized for this, where you're protecting the players too much, where people like you understand, like, oh yeah, the players are, yeah, protect me, there's this fine line, and I think Cora, we're only, you know, not even 10 games in, but there is that element, he has figured it out, I think, of when to say, hey, you know what, he wasn't very good, and yeah, he was really good. Like, there's a sense of honesty, and I think that there is that fine line.
There is that, but you know what's different, and the only thing I would criticize John Farrell about, and I've never been a manager, I don't know how hard these press conferences are, but if I had one thing that I say could have lifted the players up a little more, I know he protected them. I would lift up, like, David Ortiz, when he I would say, you know, when I'm answering questions about David Ortiz, I would you know, basically say as much positive as I could about him, because the guy is a Hall of Famer, you know? So I wouldn't just say the facts of what he did in the game. I would try to go above and beyond, because at times you're going to have to say, you know what, we weren't very good today, or David Ortiz wasn't good tonight, but yeah. You know what, I'm riding and dying with David Ortiz, that kind of thing.
That would be the one
criticism I would give of John when he gave his press conference. It was just the facts, and nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
And it's kind of creates that here. You don't want to read into it too much.
Does that become a conversation in amongst the players? Like, you know, I wish.
No, that was just my own observation.
Yeah, well,
I don't think so.
Because honestly, if you said that to the media, it'd be like, oh well, that's he's building him up too much. They're building him up too much.
Yeah. Well. And I don't think you can ever go wrong with lifting up players, because at times you have to criticize. And so as long as I know my manager's out for my best interest, yeah, I know when I stunk. And I think just telling the media honesty, mm-hmm. I think honesty is the best policy, right? Like David Ortiz goes 3-for-4 with 2 homers. Like, hey, he was awesome. Like, I'm just telling you, yeah, he's a pretty amazing player and he's great. Or, yeah, he wasn't good tonight, but you know what? This is fine. It's easier to find a positive. There's enough negative written when you mess up. So it's easy to find a positive and trying to find, you know what? He may have been, so-and-so may have been 0-for-4 today, but did you see his at-bats? Every at-bat was 3-2. Like a Mike Napoli, like every at-bat was 3-2. He's grinding. Pitcher made some good pitches. You know, little things like that. And you got to kind of weave through the season about how much you sugarcoat things and just honest.
It's fascinating to me because it's the player perspective compared to, like, our perspective of, like I'm saying, I think that you guys have every right to think that way. It's like people understand, like, that's your world. Like, that's your world. To get to 100 through 162 games, manager is manager of the team.
The
it's
team,
not like,
right.
Hey, here, go bunt.
Yeah, yeah.
It's managing the team.
Right. Well, and the guys that I need, the guys that are going to make me successful are the players. So why would I ever try to bring them down or not lift them up? I think that it's a tight-knit group, a successful ball team, and I need those guys. I need those guys to believe in us. And so I believe in it. I'm a baseball fan first, and I'm a fan of my team. I've always said that. I trust in my guys because they're my guys. So I want to stick up for them, good or bad. That's my job, is to stick up for them. I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But when in doubt, I'm going to try to be as positive I can toward my players.
Well, you guys, again, that's the important. You're around them more than anything else.
No doubt.
And if you have to take slings and arrows, it's just interesting to me because, again, coming back to the perspective – or the perception, like Eck is another one. Like when the Eck thing happened last year with Price, I couldn't believe the players were like, Eck has been honest for years. Eck has been, and probably when you were there, that was the narrative with Eck. Like Eck is, that was that guy. He played, you should know better. And where's, like, oh my goodness, are you kidding me?
I think the problem comes from, I don't listen to the outside noise. I didn't even, like, I never listened to Eck. And I, when we got in the room, like, usually the TV was on silent. Like, I remember I played in Cincinnati, and Marty Brenneman may be the most negative announcer I've ever been around. And I love Marty, but I just don't listen to it. Like,
but
we're on our own little
bubble. But guys talk, right?
Yeah, but that's a negative influence in your, I mean, I...
Yeah.
This Eckersley has no impact on how we perform in the field.
No,
so why bring that in?
I think my
take.
Right, but that would be the right way to go. But you were a veteran, you knew how to do it. If you're a young guy, and I think this was the issue last year, whereas that was the danger. But if you get young guys and you get the whispers and you get, oh, really? That's how it is? Or this,
right.
You know, that's the dangerous thing.
Well, I think that's what Core's created now. And again, it is short-lived so far. But he's created, like, hey, we're just going to worry about us. And we're going to have fun. We're going to work hard. We're going to do our job. And in the day, that's all you can do, like, good or bad. And we'll see where we're at come, you know, month to month, week to week. And we'll make some adjustments if we need to. But there's no sense in panicking or listening to outside noise and what you should be and what you shouldn't be. You know, that's why this game's going to be so much fun. There's supposed to be these great teams, and the Yankees are supposed to be, you know, world beaters. And it's, you know, it's a little bit like, hey, okay, like, all right, I never believe the hype, first of all. Like, the hype is never good.
Well, tell to me, and I've done interviews with other places around the country, and to me, the Yankees, the perception of the Yankees, people pick the Yankees, this is the reason why, because they have these big guys in the middle of the order. They have Severino, and they have a bullpen with a bunch of good names. Like, I think it starts, the Yankees conversation starts with Stanton and Judge, and maybe Sanchez, and then there's an enormous drop-off to everybody else. But you know what? That's good enough to be better than everyone else. Whereas, if you look at the Red Sox, if you said to someone in Iowa, hey, okay, baseball fan about the Red Sox, what would be What's the notable thing about them? Because the Yankees are Judge and Stanton, right?
Right. Well, I look for the missing piece. Like, where's that X factor guy? Like the Devers, like the guy that's hitting lower in the lineup, that's an absolute stud that nobody's really giving credit to.
Yeah.
That just seems to be, and Bogey having a good year.
Or Gregorius, maybe having a breakout year for the Yankees, something like that.
Well, for me, it's as the baseball fan, the guy who analyzes the teams, when I look at the Yankees, I see like the Bird and Gregory. Those are the guys that are going to be the X factors.
Right.
It's not going to be, and the Gardeners, it's not going to be the big boppers in the middle, because they're going to ride a roller coaster. They're going to be strikeouts, homers. You're going to ride a roller, but you're good at bats. When I'm catching, I'm navigating the big boys to get to the maybe less power, or I like the bigger holes of the big boys because I know I've got spots that I can pitch them. I've always said you can pitch to Stanton. But if you make a mistake,
right.
So
well,
if you
execute, evident, like he struck out five times,
right.
Huh?
If you're executing your pitches, he's a very average hitter. But if you're not, or you making mistakes, he doesn't. When he hits it, it's a homer.
Yeah.
So I mean, you kind of live and die with that. But the good thing about the Yankees, to me, is that their lineups, the depth of it, they've got really good Sanchez and Bird is the X factor for me, makes that thing really good. And Didi.
Yeah, well, it's, and then you go to the starting rotation. I mean, Severino's going to even sale. I think people sleep on Severino. Here's a question I want to ask you about Severino. So Pedro, and you guys are probably talking about this on the broadcast, Pedro had a big say in Severino's success. Pedro Martinez, he taught him the changeup. Pedro collects a paycheck from the Boston Red Sox.
Right.
Is that like? And I talked to Pedro about this, and he said, "Listen, my mission on Earth is to help people and everything else." Is that normal?
I think when you're a baseball fan, and I go back and forth on this, but when you're a baseball fan, you want to help kids out, especially a guy that is a Hall of Famer like Pedro, and he played for a couple of different organizations, so. He does collect a paycheck from the Red Sox, and you definitely don't want to help out the Yankees.
I think 20 years ago that doesn't happen.
Yeah, it may not have 20 years ago, but now there's so much more, and being a Latin player in Severino, I think he tries to look out for the pitchers in Latin America and those guys that would lean on him for any kind of advice. Is that a positive for the Red Sox? No, it's not, in trying to make that guy better. But the goodwill in that is what I see, and the baseball fan.
Yeah.
I know. We all.
It's hard for me to
fans.
Be critical of it because, like, you're saying the same thing he did. But I can accept that. It's just bizarre to me.
It is bizarre. No, it's bizarre for sure. It is bizarre to help out the enemy. But it'd be like a catcher for the Brewers coming up and asking me a couple catching questions. I'm not going to say, "Oh, I can't talk to you because
right.
I work for the Cubs." I'm going to help him out.
That's
even
fair.
The Cardinal. It just is. We want our game to be as popular as it can, and the best team should win out, not like the team with the biggest secrets or the team that has the best former players that help them out. I think we want to see the game grow as much as you possibly can, and see the best for the game. And what that is trying to give some pointers to younger players that might help them out. And it doesn't always work out either. I mean, you may have taught him this changeup, and it may have been crap, and he may have bagged it. But,
he
taught him the good one.
you've been very generous with your time. I did want to ask you, and I don't even know if you can talk about it, your movie. Can you talk about that yet?
Yeah, well, just a little bit. It's going to be filmed in Australia, I think.
I wrote a book.
It's called Teammate. About my kind of journey and with the Cubs, the World Series at the end. And it's more of a kind of a self-help book that just kind of walks you through some of the hard lessons I learned from great teammates. A lot of that stems from here in Boston and the Atlanta Braves and some of the great teammates I ran into that changed me, and Johnny Gomes and Dusty Pedroia, and great lessons I learned. But Radar Pictures bought the rights to that, and they're gonna make a movie.
Yeah, this isn't like home. Hallmark Channel movie.
It's supposed to be. We'll see. It's in the works. And
can we say who's
Hollywood,
playing you?
Yeah, John Bernthal is playing me, an up and coming actor, and he was in
he's not
the
up and
Punisher.
Coming. He's there.
He's a star. No, he really is.
He was a guy in.
It's not like a Brad Pitt that everybody would know.
He
so
was
I don't
in
know
a movie
how.
With a Brad Pitt.
Yeah,
and Fury.
He's a star. He's a monster. And so it's gonna be filmed in Australia.
Will you go?
Where you go during the filming?
It's supposed to be finalized this week. All the details.
Oh, okay.
So, but I mean, it's moving along. It's supposed to be.
That's cool.
They're supposed to start filming in I think August or September. So I mean, they're going there, set building, and the whole deal.
That is so awesome.
It's crazy. Yeah, yeah. My life has definitely been very, very fortunate. Some good things have happened to me. So,
any questions for me? Because I always end up. I feel like.
That's off the air stuff. We'll get that off the air.
Okay.
No, I don't get. You look great, though.
I thought you would never say.
I don't know how you can afford the wardrobe change. You know, that's part.
Really,
about
just
tighten the belt a little bit.
Yeah, that's really the strategy right now.
Extra belt loop.
Well, you know, that's when you were doing that
dancing. That's it.
That's like I can feel like I'm fatter, but if the belt loops keep going the right direction, that's all
that matters. Awesome, buddy.
All right, David. Thanks so much.
Always.